Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall. And Preds win last night, of course, over the San Jose Sharks, 3-1. Huge third period. Quite a boring first two periods, I'll say. And then all hell broke loose in the final, like, 5 seconds or 30 seconds of the second period. And then, of course, the Preds came out flying, and UC Saros was brilliant last night. They are now 5-1-2 mm-hmm. in their last eight, and they sort of have, at least for the time being, have righted the ship for now. Yeah. And, of course, there's still, like, a boatload of games, like 1,000 games left to go in the season. Greg Wyshynski joining us here covering the NHL for ESPN. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Greg. And, first of all, your thoughts on the Preds season to date. We're about 30 games in. They've had a really great start to the season, a really bad middle stretch, and then have been better since in the last couple of weeks. What are your thoughts so far on what you've seen from the Nashville Predators?
Yeah, it certainly does allow you to get pretty healthy when you play the Devils and Sharks back-to-back, two teams that are really struggling this season. But no, I think you're right. I think it's taken a little bit of time to round into form. On paper, still one of the most talented teams in the Western Conference. It's just that the Western Conference has been a little topsy-turvy in the first third of the season. I think all of us are pretty confident they're going to be a playoff team. It was just a matter of trying to find their footing. And so far in the last five games, like you said, the results have been a little bit of an uptick, and that's a good thing to see.
Now, was it a big surprise from a national standpoint the way the Nashville Predators struggled in that seven-game span? Or is it just one of those deals where it's a long season and teams are going to go through struggles like that? But they went through a struggle where they were giving up, I mean, a boatload of goals.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. I mean, I think it was a surprise when you take a critical look at the Predators' numbers during that stretch and during their struggles this season and see their team save percentage down in like the 880s, which is not what you expect when you have Pekka and UC Soros back there. So from that, not only from the perspective of the Predators not being in a playoff spot, but also just the failings of what many of us assumed was going to be one of the real strengths of the team between the pipes, I think was a pretty big surprise.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here. Greg, the thing that is happening, this reckoning that is happening in the NHL, so I guess my first question is, how surprised were you that Dallas made the move to fire Jim Montgomery yesterday, and a guy that's, you know, had a winning record and, you know, an excellent team last year, a team that's looking good this year, and it doesn't feel like it's, according to the press conference at least, it doesn't feel like it's related to this reckoning at all, but how surprised were you with the news?
It's not, the NHL, in fact, yesterday kind of confirmed that it wasn't, because Gary Bettman was asked on Monday at the Board of Governors meeting, are there any other active investigations into coaches? And he said there weren't, fully knowing that the Dallas Stars were on the verge of making this move with Jim Montgomery. So it's not related to the other issues that the league's dealing with. It was an absolute shock. I mean, not only are the Dallas Stars in a playoff spot, and not only did they do this on a game day, and not only does Jim Montgomery have a few years left on his contract, they're also a few weeks out from the Winter Classic, to the point where the NHL is going to start doing that behind-the-scenes documentary stuff with this team I think this week, which is a pretty fortuitous timing for the NHL to make pretty good television, but not the best thing in the world for the Dallas Stars. But, you know, from everything I've heard behind the scenes, and again, there's a lot of scuttlebutt and rumor and innuendo about what's gone on there with Montgomery off the ice. It sounds like it's a justifiable firing for what they're calling sort of a material breach. And it was a shock. But, you know, the details will come out when they come out, and I think when they do, they'll be in better focus. But, yeah, I mean, it was a jarring moment, I think, for a lot of us.
I think your mind can drift pretty quickly to one area when you hear the phrase general counsel was involved. And so, again, we'll keep an eye on it. However, Greg Wyshynski joining us here. You also had a long piece recently as it pertains to all of this stuff that's going on in the NHL. Bill Peters in Calgary. Don Cherry, of course, I think I would lump into this category, maybe loosely. Obviously a different sort of a situation there. Mike Babcock at Toronto. Mark Crawford. It's just been on and on. And I guess my question is, and we had a long debate today on the show, at the beginning of the show, just about sort of how we are evolving as a society, but we can't also re-legislate everything and change cultural norms that were 15 or 20 years ago. sort of, so in your mind, explain what you are seeing and how it's unfolding in the NHL right now, and sort of what is the driving force behind all of this?
Well, I mean, so there's a few different levels of coaching abuse, right? Like the Bill Peters stuff was pretty easy when you have a player accusing him of racial slurs and getting those accusations corroborated by ex-teammates. It's pretty easy now, I think, in 2019 to say, hey, if you're an NHL coach, you shouldn't kick your players or punch your players or choke your players for dramatic effect. I think we can all agree that that's probably not something we want in the workplace. And then it gets into that real gray area. And, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs president Brendan Shanahan spoke about this yesterday in discussing the accusations against Mike Babcock. For those who don't know, Babcock was accused of having Mitch Marner as a rookie create a list of all of his teammates based on how hard they play, and then shared that list with the players that he ranked at the bottom. And so that was seen as abusive, and the Maple Leafs at the time reprimanded Babcock for it. And then Johan Franzen, who used to play with the Red Wings, came out and said that Babcock mentally abused him to the point where he had a nervous breakdown on the bench. And Shanahan said, you know, it's kind of a gray area, dealing with some things that might have passed the test a decade ago that in retrospect don't. And he also said something very interesting, which is that, you know, there are things that at the time players in the NHL probably knew weren't cool, but it just wasn't the culture to come forward with it. So I don't know. It's one of the reasons why the NHL didn't come out with a framework for punishing this stuff, but more of a plan to kind of deal with it. It's because we are dealing with a lot of gray area when it comes to not only what happened in the past, but what's happening now insofar as what hockey culture allows.
Now, we know what's going on, or we're now starting to find out what's going on at the professional levels. How much worse is it at the youth level here in the States and in other countries?
Yeah, that's a real problem. I mean, you know, in Canadian junior, there's a history of coaching abuse. And I think the NHL in trying to create sort of an action plan to educate their personnel on diversity and inclusiveness and create a hotline for players and team personnel to call with tips about abuse. A lot of it is the hope that not only do they eradicate this on the pro level, but they have a trickle-down effect to other levels to ensure that the things that we kind of now see as being abusive aren't in practice at lower levels of sport. And Shanahan also mentioned, you know, the idea that, you know, with the things that the NHL does can have a direct effect on youth hockey in particular. And I think the league's very cognizant of that.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here. And I did read your piece that obviously tied in with Peter Laviolette and the whole thing on the bench with the Flyers. And I don't know where you fall on it, because I thought you did a very fair job of portraying, you know, Vielo's side of this whole thing. And to me, the player who was in the video who was getting hit in the head, I don't buy Peter Laviolette's explanation that it was accidental. I just don't believe in that. I also don't think it was a big deal. If we're not going to be outraged for the last 9 years, how can we be outraged today about it? And if the victim, and I always say this now as well, you can't be more outraged at something than the quote-unquote victim. And if the player who's involved in this doesn't really care and doesn't really, you know, it's not a good look. You can't do it today. I get that. But, like, if the guy doesn't care about it and doesn't view it as a big deal, then why should anybody else?
Right. And you know, I wasn't trying to, like, I mean, I had people saying I was on a witch hunt or something. I mean, all I was doing was reaching out to the guy at a time when coaches punching players was on the minds of every hockey fan. The guy who was involved in the single most viral clip of a coach punching a player in the last decade, just to kind of see what he thinks of all this stuff. And like you said, Ville Leino said it was a heat-of-the-moment thing. Laviolette apologized to him, according to the player. And while he said it's not something that should necessarily happen again, he understood the context of it at the time. And, you know, the whole point of reaching out to him and the whole point of the piece is that we are dealing with a huge gray area. I mean, when we hear a coach punching a player, it could very well look like that. It could very well be that. And I think we all have to kind of take a step back and figure out the context and listen to the players involved in these incidents. And that's also part of the equation too, is, and what makes it so hard to either litigate or relitigate this stuff, which is that the actions of a coach against one player, well, that player might see it as great motivation, like tough love, good coaching, made me a better player, maybe a better man. Another player coming from a different background might be like, that is complete abuse. And so it becomes a very sort of personal thing as far as what these coaches are doing. So it just kind of adds into that gray area. I was happy that Laviolette spoke about it because, you know, I do think that it was a heat of the moment thing and it wasn't indicative of a pattern of abuse or anything, especially with what Leano said. But it just kind of speaks to the gray areas that we're dealing with right now.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here from ESPN covering the NHL. Who are the teams that you like right now to be standing in the Western Conference Finals?
It seems to change every week. I think I've been really impressed with what St. Louis has done. I know there's a little bump recently, but to be able to do what they've done in that division with Tarasenko out for the majority of the season and knowing that Doug Armstrong, their general manager, is going to continue to be super aggressive and trying to add to a championship roster. They've been very, very impressive, and I expect that they're going to, you know, continue on as the playoffs arrive. I'm not sold on like the Coyotes yet. Edmonton has to show me a little bit more than, you know, two guys scoring 70% of the points. I think you still have a huge class of teams that are just trying to kind of prove themselves, like the Predators, like the Golden Knights, and others. But to me, the Blues and the Colorado Avalanche, for me, are the two class of the conference right now.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here. Greg, I'm going to let you go on this one. My two coworkers here, my co-host Derek Mason and my producer, we call him Munson, because that's his last name, have been begging me to watch a particular movie for months now. I, over the weekend, sat down and watched my main man Dolomite, and I saw you tweeting about it. So what are your thoughts on Eddie Murphy in Dolomite? I thought it was spectacular.
He was so good, and Wesley Snipes was so good.
Exactly.
Underrated.
I didn't even know it was Wesley Snipes at first.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're sort of like hesitant to watch it, the dudes that wrote My Name is Dolomite also wrote Ed Wood and The People versus Larry Flint. And this movie is very much like those movies. It's about sort of like a crazy dreamer and the pack of weirdos that believe in his dream. And it's a lovely, funny movie. And there's like a lot of sort of like, hey, kids, let's put on a show vibe in the way that they made that Dolomite movie. I really, really loved it. I thought it was a very special film, and I fully expect Eddie Murphy is going to get an Oscar nomination out of it.
There you go. That's big
stuff.
It's
already nominated for a Golden Globe. So
national NHL hockey cover writer and film critic as well, Greg Wyshynski. We appreciate it.
I was a film minor at the University of Maryland, so I know what I'm talking. I probably know more about movies than I know about dopey hockey. Okay, so
interesting.
It's gospel. Yeah.
Okay.
But, also, don't forget, people really like Eddie Murphy and they want him on their award show. So let's be honest on that one too.
Greg, thank you. Very diverse. We appreciate it, man.
Anytime, boys. Thanks.
Absolutely, Greg Wyshynski there joining us. Yeah, I saw his tweet about Dolomite, and I was like, you guys have been begging me to watch that, and I watched it over the weekend. So funny.
I would suggest.
It's so funny.
If you like Eddie Murphy.
If you like laughing.
Yeah, if you like laughing at a funny bone in your body, watch it.
You also, not around the kids, though.
Yeah,
and I'm glad he mentioned Wesley Snipes' character, because very underrated in that movie.
Dude, he is hilarious.
He was so funny.
I'm telling you guys, it took me like 30 minutes to figure out. I was like, oh, wait a second. Because he's aged a little bit. He's got some makeup on. I was like, wait, oh my God, that's. Holy cow. Like, it took me forever to figure that out. I guess I was just so focused on The Grift, right? I was so focused on Eddie Murphy. It's really, really good. Is it the official title is My Name is Dolomite? Is that right? Something like that. It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
It's really good.
And it's nominated for 2 Golden Globes for Eddie Murphy.
Greg, film minor at Maryland.
Kudos.
Said Academy Award nomination. It's big time.
That's pretty big. I think every time Greg comes on, we need to ask him a movie question now.
Okay.
Every time he comes on.
I love Greg. He does a great job. And I think it's really important, and we'll talk about this on the other side. It's really important, his commentary and the context around his column about Peter Laviolette. I think it's really important to understand what he was doing, why he was doing it, the comments from Billy Leano, all those things. Like, it's you have to understand the context, because I think he did get a little flack on Twitter, probably unjustly so. And then Peter Laviolette, I thought, was great to come out. And I have not said this yet, but I do think it was great that he came out with a statement very quickly addressing the issues. And so we'll explain a little bit more about that and dive a little bit deeper in when we come back right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.